This time on Kawaii-Fi Radio, we dive into the trippy dreamscape world of Paprika. It's not as drug-centric as I thought.
Oh my god!
It felt unhinged from the clips that we did see, but then watching it, it's like, oh, it's actually...
It's a pretty normal movie, I feel like.
In the grand scheme of things, yeah, it really is. And we discover a familiar face while we're there.
It's cool that he kind of looks like every J.K. Simmons character that you see in an animation.
Yeah. He was so good.
We made the same joke.
We were just making that joke. Like, he wants pictures of Spider-Man, you know? Yeah, yeah.
Wi-Fi Radio.
Konnichiwa, and welcome. You tune in to Kawaii-Fi Radio, the podcast. We dive into the world of anime, manga, and all things otaku, Japanese culture, or Japanese otaku culture, more correctly. I'm Kyle. With me is Aaron. Tifa has joined us on remote, and Kenny is off chasing the dragon in Dragon Ball Z.
Oh, I thought he was acquiring the spice so that he can hold space.
Yes, yes. But this episode, it has been 20 years since the iconic psychedelic film Paprika released, so we checked it out. And contrary to some of our beliefs, particularly mine, because of my experience with mostly seeing it through AMVs, it's not as drug-centric as I thought.
Oh, my God.
Look, I didn't have any context.
Yeah, no, it felt unhinged from the clips that we did see, but then, watching it, it's like, oh, it's actually, oh.
It's a pretty normal movie, I feel like.
In the grand scheme of things, yeah, it really is.
Yeah.
Emma's just returned, so I should close the door now that the cats have both escaped the room because they're going to bother her.
Yay!
I'm sure Liger's still probably in here and he'll meow later. But this is a show that had, well, a film which has, you know, really had a cultural impact as far as anime production and the way, like, you know, the internal, what would you say, like the...
machinations.
The zeitgeist?
Yeah, it's definitely the zeitgeist, but it definitely kind of had an impact on how people would show psychological elements in an anime and how they would kind of, like, you know, use specific colors and ways of movement to do it. But we'll get into that more later on anyway. We do need to talk about what we've been watching.
I have no idea how old I am or where I came from.
Daddy! Ohayou!
Hang time! I gotta go!
I have to know!
Hooray! I did the thing!
Oni-chan, nani wo miru?
What we're watching. Well, we've been watching things.
That we have.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Aaron, what have you been watching?
Oh, no.
Oh, yes.
Starting off heavy and hard. I've been watching Hellsing Ultimate.
Oh, okay.
Which, opposed to the regular Hellsing, is more aligned with the manga.
More violent.
Much more violent. Much more intense.
So we should immediately do a disclaimer. This one is an R-rated.
For very confronting things.
Yeah. However.
However.
It is iconic.
It is iconic. It's one of those anime that, especially when you talk about vampire anime or gothic anime, it's right there. Like, it's one of those iconic. Every convention you go to for the last 20 years, there's a Alucard cosplayer.
Oh, always.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you go to any of the anime clubbing events, there's a topless Alucard.
I wonder why.
He still wears the coat.
Of course there is. Like, what? Like, yeah, I've helped organize some of these events, and you're not wrong.
And so it's one of those anime that has stayed, I guess, relevant almost throughout the years because of just how well it did in its initial run. Like, the fact that they had the original anime and then, like, immediately after the manga was finished, did the manga, like, version.
Yeah.
Like, that just goes to show you how much demand there was for an accurate version of it. And the story, like, it's almost an hour long per episode. Mm. And there's 10 episodes with three specials, three sprinkled in there. And it's a lot.
It really is.
And the characters are fun, they're entertaining, they're also quite dark and gritty and quite serious at times, but, like, it gives you, if you like your vampires, if you like your typical Dracula, if you like your all of that, it's fantastic. Mm-hmm. Because Alucard, as everyone knows, is Dracula backwards. So, oh my goodness, he's actually Dracula, which is actually Vlad the Impaler. And like they pay homage to that and they go into his history a bit. And then there's also Nazis and there's the Vatican and there's...
Oh dear. Things are already ramping up.
Yeah. And then there's, well, it's 50 years after the first, after the Second World War. And so Hitler created a company called the Millennium Company, which was to take place after everything happened, to take over for him. And basically their task was to create an undying army of ghouls and vampires. And so they've been doing that. They've been creating them. And then the Helsing Corporation, which is who Alucard works for, have to go out and stop them because they're there to stop all the monsters. They're hired by the Queen. And then there's the Vatican, which are also monster hunters. They don't like the Helsing organization because, well, you're using a monster and, you know, that's not really okay. And it's interesting politically as well because it shows the church, I mean, in a way that I prefer, because they're not, they claim to be holy, but there's a lot of darkness behind the church, Christianity, and Catholicism. And they sort of grasp that quite well, in my opinion. So like it's got a lot of political undertones and religious tones and all of that. And it's definitely something that I wanted to get into originally because I was like, oh, there's a Helsing abridged and I want to watch that. But in order to watch that, I've got to watch the original material. And watching it, I'm like, I understand now why there's such a big following for the whole thing, because it's so much in just this little package. And so, like, obviously, if you're over 18 and you can deal with intense things, I would suggest this would be an interesting one to watch because it offers a lot. But it can be quite intense at times. Like, obviously, I don't want to get too much into a lot of things.
We don't really kind of want to go too deep down that rabbit hole.
But, like, it's definitely something. And then also, if you're a fan of your voice actors, there's a lot of the Critical Role team in this.
That's true for the dub, yeah.
The dubbing. Oh, my God, I forgot to talk about the dubbing. It's fantastic. Like, the Germans have German accents. The Vatican, they have Italian accents. They have Irish accents for the Irish people. Like, it's all very well done from a voice acting perspective.
Yeah, that's good to hear because, I mean, like, this is during that period where it's kind of like...
Very hit or miss with dubbing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And considering how long it took it to come out as well.
Yeah. So. But this was definitely one of those English dubs that hits, which is not something you get to really appreciate too much. Like, normally everyone's like, oh, I'm a sub purist. I'm all about the Japanese. But this one, the dub, I back it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, there you go. I'm pretty sure that's on Crunchyroll at the moment, but it's pretty widespread.
Yeah. It's basically everywhere because of the... in like how big it is.
Yeah. Okay, fantastic. Tifa, you've been going back down a volleyball rabbit hole. Is it Haiku's volleyball, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. I'm just sitting there going, wait, what was it again? It wasn't badminton. That was the other thing.
It wasn't basketball. It wasn't football. But there was a ball.
They were in a gym.
Indoor something gym. Indoor soccer.
But yeah.
So Haiku has kind of been on a hiatus for a little while. We did get a movie last year, I think at the very beginning of the year. But prior to that, basically all the seasons of Haiku went on hiatus in 2020. So that's 6 years. And they just announced that they have like this full lineup of the rest of the manga, which we haven't gotten yet. So we've got several movies coming out. We've got another like season coming out and all that kind of stuff. And it feels like this hiatus is essentially so they can just animate everything and then just release it in succession, which I think is a good idea because it's kind of not only the end of their like high schooling, but we actually do get a push into like college and like where they kind of go after that? Do they make it big in this sort of industry as well? And especially because they did like a whole manga sort of like one-shot series specifically with the Olympics that was in Japan. So everyone was like, when is this getting animated? When are we going to get this kind of stuff? And because that's coming out relatively soon, since they just like announced, I think it's like next year and then just continuously from that point, all of these movies and stuff are coming out. I want to go back and read all of the manga from the start to get to that point as well. So then I have a good baseline of comparison. And I think it's quite a cute story. It's like probably one of the most popular sports animes, I would say. Mm. Like, I think people would used to say Free, but Free, obviously, nobody really watches that anymore. Blue Lock is really popular.
Slam Dunk.
Yeah.
And Shield 21.
The movie came out recently.
Yeah.
The Slam Dunk movie, so. Yeah.
Which is crazy because there hasn't been that much content for it over the past few years, and then suddenly it's the movie and everyone's like, let's go back and rewatch it.
Yeah, yeah. But yeah, like Haiku starts off like quite small. You have Hinata, whose dream he saw someone else who was quite short. Someone else who's like quite a short volleyball player and was like, damn, like this guy, the little giant, is like insane. How do I become like that? But he's kind of, he can jump really high, which is really interesting in comparison to most other volleyball players as well. And I think this is also something that in Japan, like something that a lot of people would probably discuss is height requirement for things like volleyball as well, when a lot of people in population are perhaps on the shorter side. And then there's Kageyama, who is like a volleyball genius. He's a prodigy. He like knows everything. He's good at everything. And so like pitting those two against each other and then bringing in the whole team is quite wholesome in their middle school, high school days. And then going all the way to like college and Olympics and stuff sounds like a crazy route to go down. So yeah, it's like a really good read. It's a really good watch as well. It's interesting to see the difference between two different mediums, because sports is really good as a visual, anime. Yeah, in comparison to the manga, I feel like the anime we get so much more, but I'm glad that these new projects that have been announced, that there's more movies, because that part of the manga is like, we're focusing down on a specific match.
Yeah.
And like, that whole time. So it's like, oh, you're going to go to states, for example. And it's like, these are the matches you would have in states. This is the match. And it's like focusing on that is much better in an hour and a half slot than trying to stretch it over a season in comparison to training seasons where they're going to different types of competitions and stuff.
Because that would have been an hour and a half of film content means you're probably looking at 6 episodes. So that's a long time to drag out a match.
Well, also, with the series, you'd have to do a quick recap of everything as well.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, you'd be better off just watching the first and last episode of the series.
Yeah. And then, it just becomes really tedious.
Yeah.
And, I think especially the experience of seeing it in the cinema would be a lot more engaging as well. Because let's be honest, Haiku fans are going to get really into it. So it would be a rowdy cinema and it would be good. In a good way.
The last one was a film as well, and it was just one match, the dumpster battle.
Yeah. I saw that one.
But I think, it worked really, really well as a film, and then I think they tried to rejig it as, like, a season, but it doesn't work that way. As, like, the film, the intensity of being there for that match, for about the amount of time the match would actually go for as well, give or take, it worked quite well.
Mm-hmm. So. Awesome. Well, Haiku can watch the whole thing on Crunchyroll still, I believe. But yeah, it's a good run. Well, we did an episode on it, a year or so back, maybe two. And yeah, if you're into your sports anime and like that run through and not too bothered about the external elements of it, like romance and stuff like that, which tend to often be like kind of coupled with the sports animes these days, this is very much more of a pure sports anime. And
it's okay, Kyle, you could say Yuri on Ice.
Oh, I wasn't really thinking that. I was thinking like Blue Box or other stuff. And don't get me wrong, great sports anime, but the sport is kind of the setting rather than the focus, if that makes sense. But yeah, no, it's good fun. I guess onto me. I went and watched Redline again. I've been reading a lot of manga. We had a watch party the other night where we watched Paprika, and then we ended up going, oh yeah, Chris hasn't seen Redline. Let's show him the first 10 minutes of Redline, and ended up watching the whole thing. it's still good. So if you haven't heard about Redline, it was, 2009-ish? It was a great anime film. It is very much like a bombastic, all over the place sort of, oh, you know, what happens when you send this person off to become a racing champion, and, you know, everything kind of... I'm doing a terrible job of this. 2009 film. It's about a guy. He races in... The red line is not to do with where this thing is on the speedo. They have different competitions. You've got the blue line, the green line, the yellow line, and the red line happens every 5 years, and it's a big intergalactic race. And the winner of it just, like, yeah, fame, fortune, all that sort of stuff. And it's all focuses on the main character, JP, and him and his mechanic who has fallen with the mob, and somehow manages to qualify for Redline despite, you know, them doing a bit of race fixing. The pair of them actually do really care about the racing, but they're in a tough spot. So he's gone to prison and done these, you know, had to do these things to kind of bring it back. And they're still kind of doing the match fixing and accidentally qualifies for Redline. And then it's like, well, if I'm going to do it, I'm going to do it. But it's very like... Oh.
Star Wars Episode One pod racing.
Yeah. think pod racing kind of energy to it. Yeah. But then, you know, a cast of characters that all feel well thought out, well designed and created. Every character has an introduction. Every character serves a role. No one is there just to fill a space except for the crowd. And that's the way it should be. Even like the announcers are great. Like Spike Spencer is one of the voice actors for the announcing team. And he does the most, like, this is the guy who does Shinji from Neon Genesis. And he does the most zany kind of weird little dude, and it's great. Like, the voice acting cast is for it is fantastic. The dub is phenomenal, and it's high octane silliness in the best way possible. What are we, like, 17 years on? It's still amazing and stands up.
Are we going to do its 20th anniversary?
Oh, you know we're doing that. Wait for the episode in 2029 when we're doing the 20-year anniversary of Redline, and we just see you going, it's so good! But this was the director, Takeshi Kokei's first ever directorial debut. Before that, he'd just done in-between animation on everything, but he'd been in the industry for like 35 years at this point. He'd done
a lot
because, yeah, we were going through like his profile and we're like, holy cow. So he went straight from high school and joined Madhouse in like the 80s, and he's like, yeah, animator, illustrator, director, and he's was the animation director for Lupin the Third, the woman called Fujiko Mine. And then obviously Lupin the Third, Jigen's Gravestone. He was involved in Afro Samurai as a television pilot director. He worked on Wicked City, Demon City Shinjuku, Goku Midnight Eye 1 and 2, Cyber City Oedo, Dune Monocopolis, Giant Robo, Ninja Scroll, all of those as a key animator or in between animator. So, like, he had that kind of experience in these kind of I guess hyper-violent sort of things, but Redline isn't really that. Redline is kind of like you took a racing anime and smashed it together with Gurren Lagann. So
it's, wacky races.
Yeah, and like the characters in it are phenomenal, like, as well. Like, there's clearly Batman and Robin as a duo, but they're just like even more weird. And then you've got like the magic,
Gorilla Cop,
the magical girl duo from the Magic Planet, who said they will not use magic in the race to be respectful of all of their non-magical folks. like, there's just one thing after another. There's basically Tetsuo and Kaneda, the Akira duo, but like one's on the other side, like it's trying to stop the race and, you know, just gets really upset about everything. And the other one's just like, I don't care, I'm going to go. So it's, yeah, there's all these sort of character archetypes that are just great fun in there. And it's, yeah, watch it, find it wherever you can. We've got it on Blu-ray, but
I'm pretty sure it's on YouTube.
I wouldn't be surprised if it is now, because it is one of those shows that's been typically quite hard to find to watch, which is really annoying. Even Tubi TV showing it. It's on Bilibili TV. It's on Netflix in some areas. But yeah, there was quite a while there where you just couldn't find it anywhere, which is why we got the Blu-ray. But yeah, all hand-drawn, all old school. It's good fun. But yeah. Anyway, with that, it is time to kind of get on to our main feature this episode. And that is all to do with dreams.
Wi-Fi Radio.
You got the popcorn?
And a slushie.
Ooh, Maltesers.
Shh. It's starting. Cinema Club.
Paprika.
I heard Kyle's brain flatline for a second there.
No, it's all about paprika, my friend.
Oh, it's all about the spice.
Mm-hmm.
You got a mouthful of stuff. I'll take over for a second.
Yeah, thank
anyway,
you.
So we're here to talk about Paprika. It's the 20th anniversary of the film. And if you haven't seen it, it's a bit of a weird one. We were discussing during our viewing party that the opening scene was quite... similar to what the Inception.
Yeah.
Which notably took from Paprika.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Which is sort of where we were getting with it.
Yeah. Like a lot of people have copied concepts from Paprika.
Yeah, for sure.
A lot of people have copied concepts from this director in general. Like
people just copy
it's
people.
It's actually crazy.
Yeah. So Satoshi Kon, this was his last feature film before his unfortunate death in 2010. It won awards all around the world at all the festivals. It won the Tokyo Anime Award for Best Music, Newport Film Festival for Best Animated Feature, Feature Film Award at the 12th Animation Kobe Awards as well. So, yeah, it's... It was meant to be having a live-action adaptation with Wolfgang Peterson, who did The Neverending Story and Troy, but the project was, well, at least scrapped or put on the back burner along with some of his other projects, unfortunately, after his passing. But the film focuses on dreams. It's not actually drugs, which was... you know, my bad. But you could be forgiven for thinking that some, shall we say, inhibiting or illicit substances were in use. So Paprika focuses on the world of dreams. It's, you know, a window into people's psyche to understand them. And it's an idea of using a device to kind of... enter people's dreams and use that as a form of therapy, if that makes sense. So this lab has developed a technology called the DC Mini, which is a headpiece device, which lets people delve into the dreams of others or watch them back. Now, Chiba Atsuko and Tokita Kosaku have been tirelessly working to develop this technology, the hopes of using it to deeply explore patients' minds and help cure them of their disorders. However, having access to the deepest corner of a person's mind comes with some serious responsibilities and dangers. In the wrong hands, the DC Mini could be used as a form of psychological terrorism and cause mental breakdowns in the minds of targets, and this technology is stolen, and people around them start to behave and act strangely. They know they have a serious problem on their hands, and they enlist the help of Officer Konakawa, who has been receiving the experimental therapy as they search for the real and dream worlds for their mental terrorist. So that kind of gives you an overview of it, and you might be wondering, what's Paprika? Paprika is a character in this story who is within the dream world environment. We won't tell you who is running Paprika, because that's part of the story, but it is a alter ego, if that makes sense, of a character within the story. And I guess it kind of serves as like a, I want to say like a defensive layer almost.
Yeah. So that like when you, it's like having a VTuber.
Yeah.
Like it's something that you have as a proxy to stop people from being able to identify who you are in public.
Yeah, it's pretty wild. Tifa, you watched this last night with a group of friends, I think?
Yeah.
What was reaction?
I feel like the first, 10 minutes going into, opening sequence and then going into the credits, that was, fantastic. It set the tone really well. It really just, pushed you into the film. You're like, okay, I know what I'm getting myself into, basically. I feel like it's, probably one of the best setups for film just in general. It's, one of the best setups in an anime film I've ever seen. It's just... Mm-hmm. Really good. It's a very colorful film as well. They're not afraid to play around with that kind of color going into things. I think that the film itself is actually quite straightforward, which is perhaps surprising for a dream related film. And I feel like the ending of the film actually is an ending. Most of the time they just kind of cut off the story. Yeah. They try to purposely end it at a midpoint of something where you don't get an actualization or you just don't get any satisfaction of anything happening, and you're just okay, that I guess that happened, that was a film. But
it really did
have a
proper ending, and
while
I don't agree with some of it, the romance angle in particular just kind of seemed a bit why. But the rest of it, it felt like we kind of cleared up every single loose end as part of it. And it's while the story could continue from here about how, things continue after this event, it where it is a good stopping point.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't think it was, I think I was expecting crazier. I think I was expecting kind of Imperfect Blue, where it's there are a lot of questions left in the air, but you're kind of oh, okay, they're literally just telling you this is the DC mini, this is this place, this is what's happening, we're looking for this person. You're like, okay, cool, that's fine. And you understand that there's this alter ego that's happening, you understand why this person is perhaps doing something this way and not that way, and you're just like, okay. So it was kind of different from that previous perspective, but I also liked that the way in which it was animated felt like a real good knowledge base of film and cinema and just animation in film and cinema generally. So it was just kind of cool to see how things transitioned. But I do wonder if the film was a little longer, if we could have developed on some of the other ideas that are within it. And even with that romance bit that you mentioned, I didn't necessarily take it as perhaps actual romance, but rather the acceptance of the things that we dislike about ourselves, because there is a reason why that character has an alter ego as well, is because there are things about themselves they do not accept, and it wasn't until the acceptance that we get to the story. And there are things that that person doesn't accept about the other romantic partner in that pairing, basically, and is very there are some things in this film you wouldn't say to another person generally.
No.
And so it's the acceptance of an actual person rather than I feel that they're a reflection of each other as well as the alter ego being a reflection of themselves in a way.
So. Yeah, I definitely get that. Kenny was the one of the people who, Kenny from memory suggested that we do Paprika originally.
Oh, okay.
Because he does quite like the film. And he obviously couldn't be with us today, but he does have a, his verdict is it is a trippy movie, but that kind of makes sense whenever you're playing with dreams. And it's disguised as an interesting whodunit murder plot behind symbolism and visuals that then, play with the idea of the internal psyche and what that means to us, which is pretty much exactly what happened. There we go, done. We're done.
All right.
Thanks, Ken.
That was Wi Fi Radio. We'll see you next week.
But yeah, look, I mean, I really enjoyed it. I think it's fair to say that it is obviously not a film for all ages, because there are some rather intense themes in here. Depending on where you are, it'll either be MA-15 or R-17-16, depending on the region. But it is very psychological. It is playing around with a lot of ideas and trauma in particular as part of this. And, if you're trying to do therapy, of, you know, in any shape or form, of course, is going to be some form of trauma or experience that someone's had that they need to confront. And this does a really good job of that. Like, I think the detective's story in particular, his whole storyline was phenomenal. Like, the reason he doesn't like certain things, the reason he became a detective, a police officer, like, all these elements play into the story and help build it into a much larger whole compared to what I was expecting.
Well, it makes the characters feel like they're actual people with backstories to them instead of just characters thrust into a role. Like, oh, yes, I'm just the police officer because the movie needed a police officer. No, I'm a police officer. Here's my life backstory. Here's how I got here. Here are the issues that I'm dealing with because of how I got here. Like, it's a genuine fleshing out of each of the characters, not just the detective, but like each of the characters is properly fleshed out, which is incredible to see, especially get told in a movie so quickly whilst also dealing with all these other things going on.
Like, even though they could have filled this with psychobabble, like, you know, well, technobabble or psychology content that was just kind of like, you know, lots of stuff. They did enough to bring you into it without overloading you on information. Like, you know, working in communications for a long time, like, that's one of the big things we have with when dealing with researchers sharing their research. They want to tell you everything about it, but it's like, no, you need to get to the core of the bit that makes people interested in it. And that's what they did really well with this. They took that and they went, okay, we're stepping into people's dreams, and this is how we're doing it, and this is what it can result in. And they didn't then go deep into the psychoanalysis of it. Or when they did, they put that in the background as a separate thing of someone else having a conversation. So if you wanted to listen to it, you could tune into it, but the story still proceeded without you needing to know that. So it's very accessible in that way. You do still have to pay attention. We like films where you have to pay attention, because if it's a film you can just put on in the background and zone out and not pay attention to at all, that's, well, yeah, you might as well be listening to a podcast.
Not a great film.
Or, yeah.
Hi.
I also just, I love that this started with the detective as well, and you don't find out until later what his role within the bigger story generally is. So I thought that was cool. I also think that it's cool that he kind of looks like every J.K. Simmons character that you see in an animation.
Yeah. He was so good.
We made the same joke.
We were just making that joke. Like, he wants pictures of Spider-Man, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then the scientist looks like John Goodman.
Yeah. This was produced at Madhouse, which, you know, it makes sense because, you know, Satoshi Kon was with Madhouse for a long time. It shows, like, this is very much in line with all of the other films that he did prior to this. So if you're not aware of who Satoshi Kon is, he is obviously the creator and director of Perfect Blue. He then also did Millennium Actress, which we covered about a year ago, me and Ken did an extra on. We did Tokyo Godfathers, and then also there is Musin Dairin, which is a TV series. It's Paranoia Agent. That's the one with, like, the kid with the bat and the roller skates. He kind of does go into a lot of, like, the violent psychological areas. Like, you know, Perfect Blue as his, like, directorial debut. Like, everyone was kind of, once they saw it, they're like, oh, you're that kind of person. Cool, okay. But yeah, this was, you know, the last kind of major project he did before passing, unfortunately. There was a couple of other ones where, like, he did a TV specials, like storyboarding and directing sort of thing. But other than that, he is known for starting in manga in, like, the 80s. He was a manga artist and editor at Young Magazine. Following Perfect Blue, he then became kind of like a well-known one. He did have a fifth film, The Dream Machine, that was in production at the time of his death. Unfortunately, that ended up being cancelled afterwards. And all of his works as a director were through Studio Madhouse, where he was a staff director along with Rintaro and Yoshiaki Kawariji. He was a founder and part of the 15-member steering committee of the Japanese Animation Creators Group, which was their labor group / union. So, you know, quite heavily involved. Unfortunately, he passed away just before his 47th birthday of pancreatic cancer. And he did leave a final statement on his personal blog just before passing. You look at the work that he he's done and the shows that he's put out and, you know, the manga work that is still out there as well. Like, there's some really interesting ones. There's Opus and Kai Kissin that I both want to read. And then there's also Yume no Kasaki, which is kind of like a compilation manga. So he's got a lot of other works outside this, but I'm thinking, like, we haven't touched on Perfect Blue yet, but I think that needs a very specific kind of approach. So that might not be this year. But Tokyo Godfathers, I'm thinking we might do that in a couple of weeks as one of our extras for while we're away in October. So, yeah, keep an eye out for that. Now, as far as Paprika goes, the advertising for it was kind of a little bit wild. The branding that they used for the US release was obviously promoting Perfect Blue and Tokyo Godfathers as prior works, and then the tagline, "This is your brain on anime." Quite
kind of funny.
Yeah, it's quite an interesting choice.
I can see that. I can definitely see them doing that.
Sense where the rap came from now.
Yeah. So, yeah, there's a lot of strange ones around here. There's a lot of people in the review community when this first came out that didn't understand the concept. They're like, you know, a bizarre premise exploited with moderate results. I'm like, I would not call that moderate at all. That was pretty well done. But yeah, it's one of those films where there's lots of little bits and pieces in the background that we're not aware of that all show up in the trivia sections of, you know, websites. So I'm just quickly pulling up that list again. So the tall and short bartender on Paprika's website, they are voiced by director Satoshi Kon and the original author of the Paprika novel, Yasutaka Tsutsui, respectively. So they both featured in it as kind of like that internal monologue people who are within that space, which is kind of cool. Paprika interviews Konakawa in his filmmaker guise and mannerisms, and they all are then based off Kurosawa Akira, which is, you know, kind of funny because he was one of the people that he was often compared to. He did he was old school writer. He did Drunken Angel, for instance. These are like the old samurai films that were done in like the 50s and 60s. He was a black and white filmmaker. Neo 1, 2, and 3. And he's got a lot that he did before his passing. Unfortunately, a lot of these older directors have passed away, like Tora Tora Tora, Song of the Horse, Red Beard, High and Low, Sanjiro, Yojimbo, all these kind of like iconic Japanese samurai sort of esque focused films. He was, you know, absolutely bonkers, but it was really cool to see that you see like the pictures of this guy and then the pictures of the detective in that guise and within the dream world, and it's like, oh, that makes sense. Okay, I see what you're going for here. It's a lot of kind of strange, bombastic moments throughout it that pull from all sorts of media around. And I think that really helps. Like, it shows that they care about, like, you know, if you're going to do anything where you've got a character who's into cinematography or filmmaking, there needs to be elements of strong filmmaking within the film.
And I loved that. The choices they made of what particular films as well, I think, showed his age really well as well. Yeah. We were like, oh, okay, Tarzan is Roman Holidays. Like, you know, it just kind of showed his, like, taste and his age, which was a good way to fill out his background without having to actually just state all of his interests and all of his things.
So, yeah. No, I think they did a really good job of using the dream sequences to bring out more info for each of the characters, to give you an understanding of, like, I mean, the whole point of the dream sequences in the anime setting is to let them learn about the people and discover what, you know, was causing issues for them, or, you know, figuring out a way to then pull out that trauma and, you know, resolve it. So they using that to then build the characters was a really smart decision. So yeah, I really enjoyed it. Look, Paprika is not going to be for everyone, I think we should state, obviously. If you're not into kind of bombastic, fantastical, psychological sort of outings, I guess, it might not be your cup of tea. If you don't want to think too hard on the background of it and what the characters are saying, it might be a bit difficult of a watch. You do need to pay attention to it, so it's not I wouldn't call it like a casual watch. It's a, oh, I want to learn about this sort of film. But yeah, you can rent and buy it on Amazon Prime for about $5. It's on Blu-ray, and there are a couple other streaming services depending on region where you can get it. It is on Netflix in some areas. I think
it's available on YouTube for free as well.
That's surprising.
And on Amazon, because they have like this deal with like Sony or something, you can just do the 7-day free trial to watch it and then cancel.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It is. Oh yeah. So on Netflix, it's on Netflix in some areas. It's on Bilibili as well in some areas, and Prime some areas, Apple TV some areas. Not really under a subscription unless you're doing Sony Pictures Amazon channel, the one you were talking about, Tifa.
Yeah, yeah.
But which is kind of crazy considering, but hey, go figure. And Tubi TV, which just seemed to say they have everything, so we'll see if that's true. But yeah, look, we 20 years on, the art style and artwork, the character designs, everything of it just works really well.
Mm.
Like, the score helps heighten all those situations. Mm. It's not a particularly standout musical score, but it does what it needs to do. And, yeah, the character designs are unique and interesting and kind of really play with that unusual feeling that the film gives you around, like, you know, the characters. Because we're going into dreamscapes, people are going to look weird and funky. And, you know, a guy might have a tentacle eye coming out of his head or something like that. You know, those sort of design choices are used to kind of, I guess, expand on character traits and ideas. So it's a lot of fun.
Well, it also highlights perspective and how you see things. Even though they may not be how they actually are, it's how you feel they are. Mm. And in the dreamscape, how you feel things are is how they actually are.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. It's playing with a lot in a good way. And I really enjoy it. It's on a 7.7 on IMDb. I'm not sure what the MAL rating is.
I think it's like an 84 Metascore as well.
Yeah, it's like, on an 8.05 on my anime list. So yeah, like across the different areas, it's still fairly well liked, and you know, that's kind of pretty cool to hear, considering it's a 20-year-old film. So literally now 20-year-old.
Yeah,
it first came out on November 25th, 2006.
So next year, it can drink in the States.
Oh no. That poor thing.
I think I read somewhere as well that this film is supposed to be set in 2012.
Yeah.
Which, did Inception come out in 2012? I've never seen Inception, but was that?
Neither have I.
Oh, really? It's a film. It's not that deep. Inception came out in 2010.
Oh, so close.
Yeah, but this still predated it. But yeah, look.
Yes. Yeah.
We won't go into the issues of Inception, but it's not that deep, guys. Like, people are like, you need to see it like 3 or 4 times. I watched it one time. Like, yeah, so he's still in the dream. Cool. There we go. It's the same premise. Just that in Inception, you go to deeper layers within the dream, and that's to do with different levels of sleep sort of thing. There's more to it than that, but that's kind of like the core element of it.
Hmm.
But yeah, look, it's we recommend Paprika. Add it to your food. Add it to, you know, your spice
mac
mixes,
and cheese.
Your mac and cheese. And then
it's good on popcorn.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I haven't had it on popcorn, actually. That's kind of a cool idea. And then obviously go watch Paprika while eating the Paprika foods and get a little bit of spices. There's also a lot of good puns in it as well, now that I remember as well. Like, we saw them all coming.
But
kind of funny. And with that, we'll be back in a moment. Kawaii-Fi Radio. Tonight on Anime Communique.
Great story. Compelling and rich.
Nothing brings ratings up like a little controversy.
That was Tuesday, man. I should be better by now.
Yeah, Aaron injured himself on his bicycle. He wanted to ride his bicycle, and it wanted to ride him.
It wanted to ride me into the gravel.
Yeah. We've got a couple of interesting news items. It's been fairly quiet on the news front as of late, and that's totally okay. That's just kind of, you know, what happens.
Well, I mean, given all the deaths that have been happening, quiet is good.
Yeah. But the first thing we're going to start off with is, I guess it's a little controversial because this is a big deal. The Japanese government is abolishing the Cool Japan Fund. Cool Japan Fund's been around for quite a while, and it kind of, its goal was to fund Japanese cultural awareness abroad. they're like, you know, it amassed a 54 billion yen loss since 2013. It has been running for a long time. I think it started in like the late 90s, early 2000s from memory. Of course, it's running at a loss because it, you know, it's a promo. It's not going to earn money. So I wasn't too sure how they thought that was going to earn money. but anyway, it had been running for a long time. It was one of those initiatives that really supported a lot of Japanese content getting Western cultural exposure. Like Pokemon, for instance, while it would have done well of its own accord, Cool Japan Fund also helped with the advertising to kind of support it and get behind it. It did the similar thing with a lot of Japanese large sort of scale projects. Started in 2002, sorry. So yeah, they had a role to play and they've done it exceptionally well. But it also makes sense that if it is a loss leader and they've got better ways now to promote Japanese culture and ideas around the world, it makes sense that it's kind of getting shut down. It's just kind of a shame. So, yeah, according to... this was listed in a few newspapers in Japan. So Japan's Ministry of Economic Trade and Industry newspaper. It submitted a budget request for... No, it was in the Asahi Shimbun, and the Japan's Ministry of Economic Trade and Industry is the department that submitted a decision to effectively abolish it. So they've said that they've requested no money for the 2027 fiscal year. No money's earmarked for the fund. It might be that they get rid of the branding and just kind of slowly slow it down after it finishes stuff, but... Various companies essentially supported that initiative, and it has been what has really helped promote anime and Japanese culture and manga as well abroad. So that's why Japan is seen as a cool destination, the Cool Japan Fund. It did what it said on the tin. That's really surprising.
Look, you go to the right place, you get the right stuff going, it's going to work out properly.
Yeah. I mean, and it was like a major part of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe's kind of like like tourism push. So like, you know, it clearly worked.
He did great things for Japan.
Yeah, he did. But... It's kind of like it's come and it's gone. It's come and it's gone. It's promoted like film, fashion, Japanese arts, entertainment, food, all those sorts of different things to kind of build that international awareness of Japan's culture, because obviously Japan's a small island. So like, you know, it might have a lot of people, but you know, as far as like landmass, they're trying to compete with like the US and China and all those countries in Europe. Like there's a lot to compete on the world stage with there. And they, you know, kind of started a bit behind the ball on it because of just timing and everything else. So it did its job. And, you know, thankfully because of that, Japan has become, you know, very much a cultural icon, I guess you could say.
Very much so. Because I was going to say like, well, they could look at New Zealand with Weta Workshop and Hobbiton. And I was like, what about all those Naruto villages? What about all those like those things catered specifically towards tourists coming and like participating in their culture and doing the things that they're known for. Like they've got a lot of that, so they've done a really good job there.
They really have. Yeah. Moving on, Aaron, you also had a newspaper pickup, which is kind of funny that we're both finding stuff from Japanese newspapers this week. A theme park in France has some possible legal issues to do with Japanese rights?
Oh, I thought it was in Saudi Arabia.
No, they're the ones who are funding it.
Oh, okay. So basically France wants to make this big old Dragon Ball park, but they didn't get the licensing from it, and I'm pretty sure they already like released like plans for the park and like the builds and like how there's like different areas for each of the Dragon Balls, so there's going to be like seven different areas, and It when they released the concept, what was it, like a year or two ago?
Yeah, it looks like it.
It looked fantastic, but you'd think that something like this would have gone to get approval first and get all the licensing before they ran with the ball, especially considering like we had the passing of
Yeah, Akira Toriyama.
Last year, so like, it would have been ideal to get it from him before he passed, but like...
Well, the interesting thing is the Toei Animation Europe website lists Dragon Ball IP right holders as Bird Studio, which is Akira Toriyama Studio, Shueisha, and Toei Animation. But according to a couple of people who are working on the project on conditions of anonymity... They confirmed the proposal has not, at least not yet, secured this essential golden ticket, is the phrase, because it is a planned manga-themed theme park in Sergy-Pontois in France, and there is no official approvals done, despite, it sounds like groundbreaking has already begun.
That's so crazy.
Yeah. Even the French Prime Minister, Emmanuel Macron, announced 6 billion euros for the theme park project, and Macron's office said one of the theme parts is expected to be manga themed. So it sounds like they're doing a group of theme parks is on a scale not seen since Disneyland Paris, and it's going to have lots of different areas in it and different parks. So one of them is going to be anime and manga themed, but the others will be based on other things. So they might have other things in it. The reason this is kind of funny is because it's being backed by Saudi Arabia's Qiddiya Investment Company. And this is not the first time the Saudis investment fund has come into trouble for building things without rights. So
yeah, we paid money, they built it, it's fine.
Yeah, so I'm not sure what's going to happen here. It's a lot of money.
Oh, yeah, no it's doubt.
$7 billion US for these theme parks. Like, obviously not all of that's going into the Dragon Ball Park, but yeah. The amount of money they've probably put into design and layout already without already getting the approvals, that's kind of saying a lot.
Yeah. Like, why would you just be like, yes, we're building this? Oh, approvals. Like, imagine if somebody did that with Asterix and Obelix. The French would lose their minds.
Yeah.
It is French, right?
Yeah. They've already got a Asterix and Obelix theme park there, which I so want to go to.
Yeah, but imagine if Japan made one without getting their approval. Oh, they would go nuts.
I mean, like, it's kind of funny because Japan didn't ask for anyone else's approval in the past, which is why Lupin was never called Lupin until they sorted out the rights agreement in the mid-2000s, because Japan did not have a copyright law. So, all's fair in love and war. France is just doing back to Japan what they did to them.
Yeah, I mean, yes, but now that Japan does have copyright law, they're hitting it like extra hard. And it's,
yeah.
Ugh.
But yeah, look, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this all washes out over the coming years, because obviously, like, while work has begun, it's still a few years away. So they do have time to sort it out. It's just whether that's going to cost them more now because they haven't done through the right channels.
I want them to have... So you know how Disney has the character actors?
Yeah.
I want them to go to, like, a local gym and just pick out the buffest guys as character actors.
I mean, half of them will be wearing Dragon Ball shirts anyway, so, like... Anime is huge in France and Italy in particular, because early years, we've mentioned this before on the show, early years of the European Union, there wasn't enough funding to support arts because it was all about getting everyone stable. That was the focus. It was the economics. So they were one of the first countries to start buying Japanese content and translating it. So they were doing it like 15 years before English-speaking countries were. So that's why they were so far ahead on Dragon Ball, Lupin, Cardcaptor Sakura, all that sort of stuff before everyone else, Sailor Moon. It's kind of wild. Like, some stuff that is huge in France and Italy never got big in the West because it was before it happened in the West. And they just never ended up bringing it over or getting it translated. So then it became fan translated and only kind of a niche of fans were interested in those things. But you go to, you know, France and Italy and they're like, hell yeah, let's go. So, yeah.
FYI, people who are making the park, if you need a Majin Buu, I'll keep this body shape. If you need Krillin, I will shred myself. Call me, I'll do the job.
Oh, will you? Yeah. You know, I can shred.
Yeah. I'll get shredded. Dude, let's do it. To play Krillin at the Dragon Ball Park?
I mean, yeah, actually, you're not wrong. Like, moving on, Tifa. Jujutsu Kaisen Season 4 has had a few teasers and announcements to do with MAPPA's 15th anniversary. They've just had a poster released.
Yeah, so basically they're like, yep, Season 4 is definitely happening. It's definitely coming, guys. And they've released a new poster for the new season, which I'm sure a lot of people are very excited about. And this poster it features, obviously, my favorite, Sukuna.
That's who it is. I thought it was Deidara.
Art is a blast, my friend.
The poster itself is quite an interesting one. I feel like it doesn't give anything away if you haven't read the manga, but for people that have read the manga, you're kind of like,
That's what's happening.
Okay.
This it's a pretty cool one, and we were discussing this earlier, but Mappa's kind of laid out a rough timeline for some of their stuff. Jujutsu Kaisen wasn't on that, but we know the next sort of major project of like this sort of group is Chainsaw Man's next season. So you suspected it might be after that, so maybe early next year.
Yeah, either early, like midway, but I wouldn't, to be honest, I wouldn't be surprised if it's like October again, because it's been October previously, so.
This is true, and it does kind of fit in with like all the spookies for Halloween, so it does fit in with that sort of, that season tends to have more of the supernatural content these days, so. Yeah,
and I think it gives them a good leeway to, you know, they usually do those like first episode previews around Japan, or if they want to do that whole like movie recap thing that they tend to do sometimes, where they play the last episode and the first few episodes in cinema, it gives them time to kind of do that.
I wouldn't be surprised if they do that at the end of October as part of like the Halloween cinema run. And then we have it kick off in like January or May, April next year. Though if they're going to do that, you'd want to do it kind of before the next season. So, yeah. It'll be interesting to see what announcements come through, because if they do end up doing that again for like the recap and the first couple of episodes, then, I mean, MAPPA does love putting stuff in the into the cinemas at the moment. They're making a lot of money from it. So
they are, no yes.
Alrighty. Last one we're going to wrap up on. Even the Student Council has its holes. This is a manga series that has just had its TV anime confirmed for October 3rd next season. A lot of stuff have been confirmed. It is going to be animated at... okay, it's not even listed. That's weird. Oh, Passione. So they've done kind of a lot of weird shows over the years, and this is right up their channel. So I think this will be pretty good. The manga is definitely not for all ages either in this one. It is very much a coming of age, self-realization of, you know, what you like in other people sort of thing. So is there a romance undertone? Yeah, but it's kind of more about the students in this group understanding themselves a bit better, if that makes sense, as they mature and go through puberty and, you know, the later stages of that. It's really goofy. It's really silly. It's really gag-oriented. And, based on the trailer that's dropped, this is going to mirror exactly the same feel of the manga, but it is not going to be for all ages, because there will be, bits and pieces in there that are not, shall we say, age-appropriate. Because of just, you think about the ages we're talking of, like, you know, 14 through to 18, like, a lot of dirty jokes are made during that time period. And this really kind of embraces that idea. So the synopsis for it, if you aren't aware, it's a student council filled with weirdos. One new member is about to have a hell of a school year. Mizuno Ume just wanted to avoid repeating a grade when he joined the student council. After all, it seemed like an easy fix to his academic problems. But then he met his fellow council members. Each of them is eccentric in their own way. One's an airhead, another's scary, one's secretly a pervert, but all in all, they're just really weird. Yet somehow they're all oddly cute and endearing, which means Mizune is stuck with them and all the chaos they bring to the table. Get ready for a slice of life manga that's irresistibly charming, quirky, and a little bit naughty. Everyone's losing their mind online over Tan, which is the boy with the green hair, and it is a boy. He's just very effeminate. And he gets his nip-naps out every now and then, and has bandages over them and stuff. So it's just kind of a bit funny, because everyone thought it was a girl, and it's like, no, it's a boy. And he is very much a boy. it's really goofy and funny. I think this is going to become like, I want to say Konosuba sort of audience will really enjoy this. It's really goofy. It's not... You know, it's willing to go to the places other school shows won't, but within reason, if that makes sense. So it's kind of well balanced. And the manga's, like, I've been reading it for a good year now, and it is bombastically silly. So can highly recommend it. Anyway, that's kind of the big news items. There have been, sure, a couple of other animes and mangas that have had their runs come to an end, but there's not been anything, like, kind of major that we've seen drop over the past few weeks. It's kind of been all focused on, like, updates for the upcoming season that, you know, most people are kind of already aware of. Like, yeah, this is coming. Yeah, this is going. And in a complete other random side note, Joe Hisashi from Studio Ghibli has received 3 Guinness World Records. So good on him.
Congratulations.
It's probably like the Guinness World Record for producing the most Studio Ghibli songs or something. Like, highest selling classical run in the Hollywood Bowl. Most tickets sold by a classical composer at the Tokyo Dome in a single run. And longest residency by a classical composer at Radio City Hall at New York City. In a single run. Wow. So yeah, like he's just clearly been going on a tour and just picking up things. So he's got this beautiful picture of him really happy, like holding 3 Guinness World Records and struggling to hold all of my Guinness World Records. I'm so talented.
First world problems.
I know, right? But yeah, kind of cool. That's kind of it. We'll be back in a moment.
Wi-Fi Radio.
Well, that is where we're going to leave things for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. Next time, you got any of your damn Pokemons? We want to talk about damn Pokemons. You got a Pokemons under there? Yeah, no, I want damn Pokemon. yep, Tifa got the Pokemon. Is that a Shaymin? Nice.
We're green buddies.
Yeah, you got your routes. I've got actually all of my Pokemon are in the other room. Oh no, I'm the odd one out. Well, I want the Pokemons. We're going to be revisiting the first 3 Pokemon films. So we're going back in time. It's Pokemon funds. It'll be great.
Wow. Pokemon Mewtwo Strikes Back, Pokemon 2000, and Pokemon 3, the one with Entei, the really weird one with parent issues.
I mean, that's Pokemon in a nutshell, parent issues.
No.
I haven't seen them before, so yeah.
Oh boy.
I know Pokemon 2000 is these stupid birds won't leave me alone.
No, it's a rich guy tries to capture all the birds because he wants to capture the guardian of the ocean.
Oh, right. No, it's Ho-Oh's the one where it's these birds won't leave me alone. Yeah. these stupid birds. Anyway, a big thank you, as always, to our Patreon members for their support. If you want more Wi-Fi content, you can head over to our Patreon channel to get that. And obviously, we'll be posting socials and release info across our platforms. We have been a little bit slack on that. That's all on me because I've just been too busy with work. Tifa's just grooving to the groove, loving it.
Aaron's gonna make some terrible content.
Yeah, we were talking about doing this all year, and then everything has just been a cluster mess, and it's not good. We promise there is more coming. But yeah, and that's it. We will be back in 2 weeks. Hopefully I have the time to get this one out this week now that I'm not traveling a heap in the coming weeks, which is nice. And we'll have more goofy stuff coming up for you soon.
Yuck.
We'll be back in a couple of weeks. You've been listening to Kawaii Radio. Thank you so much for joining us. And until next time,
watch some anime!
Comment during the entire movie was about the arm position about the dolls.
Yeah, no, but like I said the same thing, bro. I was like, what are those dolls doing?